It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Hello, Kyle from LaGrange. Barber, what's up, man?
Still on, Dave. Bubba, how the hell are y'all?
Doing great. You know, hope you are.
Yeah, I just want to tell you, I got my season tickets and I'm a Pirate Club member, so. And we have a special guest. Hold on.
Mackenzie Blair Richmond, my daughter.
She says, don't call her sissy, but her mama calls that. And what's your favorite team? Pirates and the Redskins are her favorite team, by the way, guys. So, there. Bubba, we got a special show. Two great guests tonight.
Yeah, we do. We're going to catch up with the play-by-play voice of North Carolina baseball with the Pirates traveling to Boshimer Stadium tomorrow night. And that's Dave Nathan. And then we'll also catch up with a distinguished East Carolina alumnus. He played baseball for the Pirates back in the early 60s when they were NAIA power and, of course, won a NAIA national championship. He did not take part on that team, but he was on a team that finished third at the NAIA national tournament in College World Series, and that is Dr. Jerry McGee, a longtime president of Wingate University.
Yeah, and he had a lot of great stories. We'll be talking to him in just a little while. We had great news from out of Alabama, right, Bubba, as far as that Auburn regional for the women, the women's golf team, Lady Pirates doing very well.
Yep, they are. Yesterday, after the first round, we were in third place and didn't play quite as well today, but we're still in very good shape. The situation is you have four 18-team regionals, and you have to be in the top six of your regional to qualify for nationals, which, of course, has 24 teams. And right now we are currently in fifth. We are 10 over par. The leader is one over par. And we are three shots ahead of where we need to be. So there are two teams. I'm trying to remember who those two schools are, but there are two teams at 13 under. And that's the mark that we have to be ahead of in order to make it to our national tournament. So hopefully the ladies will play very well tomorrow. And they've shot 3 over and 7 over. So 291 and 295 as it's a par 72 course. And they take the top four scores.
So we're one off the pace right now.
As far as the leaders, we are 9 off the pace, but
I got you.
Yeah, so just one moment, and I got the leaderboard for you. Duke's actually winning.
You're gonna have to talk. You're gonna have to talk to your phone better, Bubba, if you want our listeners to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. Duke's actually in first right now. Duke is ranked third nationally, and the Blue Devils are +1. UVA had a nice day after shooting 8 over yesterday. They went 5 under today, and the Cavaliers are second at +3. Florida State is +4, and Vanderbilt is tied with them at +4. And then it's the Pirates at +10. And then those two schools that I cannot think of tied at +13 in sixth place. For Auburn and Tennessee. Auburn is ranked 13th, and Tennessee is 42nd nationally.
Well,
all four teams that are ahead of the Pirates are ranked in the top 17 nationally.
Well, I do. Kevin Williams, we'll have to have him back on. Hopefully we'll be talking about nationals. We'll try to get him on next week. Pirates have got a big baseball game, right, guys?
Yeah, midweek against the Tar Heels is always a big game. This year, you know, even more important, that the conference is the most important thing. But that's always a big rivalry, but that's a big RPI game, too. That's you need to get that one. It can really jump us in the RPI. Any idea, Bubba, on how many spots we could gain with a win over UNC, or would it just hold us steady?
I'm not sure. With the spot that we're in, I mean, with the teams that are ahead of us, I think It's going to be more dictated. I mean, obviously, it's important what we do, but it's going to require us to win and them to lose. And with the resumes that they have, we're going to be hard pressed to probably get higher than maybe fourth.
Yeah. Well, all we need to do is just stay in that top eight, and the
higher
up in the top eight would be better.
If we can hold steady, we're pretty much where we are now. We'll be in really good shape.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes. We'll be talking to Dave later on in the show about the ECU and UNC preview. It's a very exciting time, and appreciate all the fan support. I tell you what, Pirate Nation has really been coming out. And guys, we have one more series. This weekend we're going to be away, obviously, Wichita State. But next weekend we have Memphis, and that would be great to have a huge crowd, don't you think, guys?
Yeah, no, it would be great. You obviously want to send these guys out. Hopefully this will not be the last time they're playing in Clark LeClaire. Hopefully there will be a regional, and most likely there will be. But, it would be nice to send them out in the Memphis series with a big turnout, especially for Senior Day. Or we don't have a midweek after that, do we? Do we have a midweek home game?
Yeah, we
Memphis?
Do. We do have it. Well, not after Memphis. It's the end of the year, the end of the regular season. It'll be Campbell next week. So Wichita State, Campbell.
The Fighting Camels got a good team this year.
Yeah, so basically the last four – this week is the last road trip, if you will, for Carolina and Wichita State. And the next week you have Campbell, and they'll finish things off with Memphis. And then we have the conference tournament – the following week. So we've got the two more strong weeks we got to look for. So we'll see how things go. We're dropping this podcast on Wednesday, being with the Tar Heel game. So
and also that Memphis series, Dave, sorry to interrupt you, but that Memphis series is one that is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the Easter weekend series.
That's right.
So just keep that in mind if you're planning on going to that series. And then also, of course, the conference tournament, like it will be for the foreseeable future and has been in recent years since we joined the American down in Clearwater.
I really like it down there. We'll see. Last year was crazy with the weather, but they did a nice job of – I know Corey didn't like it, but it turned out nice with all the – that we actually won the tournament, and they didn't get the bad weather like we had thought. But if you don't plan, I guess it would be where you would be, you know, and by the weather. So I guess you really can't win with Mother Nature, can you?
Yeah, weather's one of those things, one of the uncontrollables, as they say. So you just have to make the best of it when it happens. Speaking of just some bad news, how about Trey Benton? Unfortunately, we found out today that Trey Benton will no longer be available for the Pirates during the 2019 season due to an arm injury. And it was not specified whether that's an elbow, shoulder, whatever. It just said arm injury, according to what I saw. So we'll have to see what else comes to light regarding Trey's injury.
With the Pirates, how are you guys feeling with the last 2 weeks? You feeling strong? Are you feeling when Bubba told me about that this afternoon, obviously I was very upset because injuries happen, but you feel bad for the guy personally. I think Trey Benton is great. He was starting to pitch better, and you feel bad when he was starting to really get back in the groove, so to speak. So we'll see how things go. I guess, my question was for both of you, and I saved it for the podcast. Do you think he comes back for another year? Do you think he'll get drafted because of his injury? It looks like that may hurt him, right?
I think at this point, I'm kind of expecting him to be back for a senior season, but we'll see.
Yeah, he was one I thought for sure would be going, but, you know, in other words, have a really strong postseason, but now that he's not going to be in the postseason, unfortunately, and that's you feel bad for the kid. I think that
you feel bad for him personally, and then also it hurts pitching depth. So in terms of the team, but injuries
that's
are part
of the
game, and hopefully he'll bounce back and have a good season next year.
And that's the thing; it helps us with what we have coming back, and we'll be able to have Cooch Maynard. It's just a sophomore, right? So you have Cooch Maynard, and you definitely will have him and. And there's a few others that come to mind. Hang on.
Yeah,
Bubba. Oh yeah, Gavin Williams, Tyler Smith, of course, and then you have guys like Matt Bridges who had to sit out this year. Matt Bridges will be back, so hopefully he'll come back off an injury strong and be ready to go for 2020.
Yeah,
and I don't know the recruiting class, but there's some guys from freshmen there as well.
Tell McKenzie she either needs to get into this podcast and be the fourth man on the crew or stay out of it, one of the two.
Yeah. What's wrong with you, child?
It's Reese, the new Reese. Yeah, so guys, I know that with all going on, the Pirates, what about season tickets? Have you heard any more?
I have not.
It's $12,000. Since the 12,000 that we sold, that was announced by Gilbert on the Voice of Colors radio show, so just the 12,000. I'm sure it'll continue a slow rise, and then pick up big time in August. So hopefully I think we'll reach 15 easy. Maybe get above that.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think that interview that John Gilbert had on Hoist the Colors Radio last week on Pirate Radio 1250, and definitely go back and check that out if you have not heard it. Excellent interview, and he actually talked about, he said, I sure would like to get 16 or 17.
Yeah, man, that would be unbelievable if we could.
Yeah, my only concern with Gilbert, though, is still – you know, and he indicated having trouble scheduling courses. It's a short situation. Is what I'm trying to say. But that's my one concern with Gilbert is his ability to schedule. Not for his lack of trying, just, I don't know, looking at what he did at USM with scheduling, that was the one thing that didn't overly impress me. He did do a couple of nice things. He got him a 2-for-1 with Mississippi State and a home-and-home with Tulane. But that's my only concern with John Gilbert is scheduling. So we'll see how things work out. I got a feeling we're gonna have a group of five home and home coming for 2020, and then a return game to Daddy Picklin at a later date, which is fine with me.
What do you think, Mac? Sunbelt, CUSA? What do you think it's gonna be?
I think it's going to be something weird because some things he said indicated to me he's having trouble finding a regional opponent or an opponent of great interest. So I got a feeling something like a MAC, Sunbelt, something like that. It could be Conference USA. That's my guess. I couldn't tell you a team, but just something along those lines.
Road trip to Kalamazoo, Michigan, or somewhere to watch the Pirates play Western Michigan.
That'll work. I mean, at this point, it's an FBS. You should be able to find I would rather get a home game out of it from an FBS opponent than just take a payday personally. I'll tell you, what I do find interesting, if you look at Baylor's schedule, they got an opening next year. They got two openings, and they've already scheduled an FCS opponent.
And, so we need that would be awesome.
I wondered about a home and home with Baylor, perhaps.
That would be awesome, and we would definitely take it.
But you know, I just by his comments, I don't think if we had a home and home with Baylor as a possibility, I would think he would have had that kind of.
But I think maybe, but also the fact that until he's the type of person, until he gets it done, he's not going to promise it. So,
right, but he seemed like he wasn't expecting anything along those lines. I mean. You know, Baylor wouldn't be a regional opponent, and I don't know that it would be an exciting opponent, but it would certainly be a quality opponent. But I just got a feeling this will be a G5 home and home. Bubba, what do you think? You said you agree with that?
Hey, at least we wouldn't have to go against those Art Briles offenses.
That's true. Well, but you know what? Baylor went 6-6 this year after having a terrible year, year one under oh, God, I can't think of the coach's name. Former
Tim Matt Rule.
Yeah,
he took him 6-6 too. He is going to build that thing. He's going to build it the right way.
They gave him, what was it, like a 7-year deal?
7-year deal, yeah.
They were smart.
And because of the with that situation, I don't blame him for asking for that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just Bubba, you said I texted you that the other day. You said you kind of agree that you think it's gonna be home and home with the G5 or
Yeah, that's what I would think. And I'm like you, as opposed to playing a Norfolk State or somebody like that. And that's something that I've talked about with other Pirate fans as well. They agreed with us that they would rather see a home and home with a Western Michigan or Northern Illinois or even like North Texas or whoever than playing Norfolk State.
And also, it's a road game. We need a road game. We don't need a home game. So there's no need to sign another FCS home game. And also, look, to be damn sure, man, if we can't find a road game against a group of five, then I really am concerned about scheduling.
That's true. That's a good point. Plus, you could also have a
– Because those teams, even though we've been down the last 4 years
– Hey, a lot of
especially the last three. Right. Yeah. I was going to say that – a team in one of those three leagues that we mentioned, CUSA, Sunbelt, and then the MAC, they would love to have a team from the American come to their place.
Is Coastal, he indicated about it not being regional. Is Coastal filled up for 2020?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's something we need to do more research on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine they are.
And that's the thing we have right now. It looks like the problem we face with this whole thing is with most people would know listening to this podcast, scheduling, and he said that scheduling is done way out.
Yeah.
And,
well, but there are some teams that are looking for a home game. And some teams intentionally leave that home game up and plan to schedule an FCS. But if you get a chance, if you're a Sunbelt school or a CUSA school in particular, and you get a chance to get a home and home with East Carolina, you're probably
that would be awesome. I don't have a problem with that at all.
You're probably going to jump at it. Yeah, I mean, if you're Middle Tennessee, you're probably going to jump at the opportunity for a home and home with East Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Arkansas State comes to mind. Troy. I mean, you were talking about Sunbelt. I mean, you look at those two come to mind where they're a good opponent, and they really, I mean, there's a Southern, I'm sure Southern Misses, I would think, would have, that would be nice. That's something I was hoping with Gilbert, and maybe when we have him back on, I really want to see a home and home with Southern Miss. I've talked about
that.
And I know, who would you pull for, Kyle? You have so many friends.
I'm like I always did when we played Southern Miss. I pulled for the Pirates.
And I'm messing with you.
I love USCM, and I got a lot of friends down there. But there's nothing like beating your brother. I mean, you want to beat your brother more than you want to beat anybody. And when we play USCM, that's kind of feel like they're my brothers. I do have such close ties to that program. And East Carolina and Southern Miss always have a mutual respect for each other just in general.
Going way, way back, and they
some information as far as Coastal Carolina. This year, they play at home Eastern Michigan and Norfolk State, and then they have road games at Kansas and at UMass.
Uh-huh.
So then looking at 2020, they only have three non-conference games on the schedule thus far, and those are at Eastern Michigan on September 12th, but then I believe the date that we need is the 26th, right? Unless we move some things around.
Well, you can move some things.
But what isn't that the date that we needed?
I don't know the exact date, to be honest.
I think you're right, but I think it's the end of September.
September 26th. So on September 26th, they actually have Kansas coming to town in Myrtle, Conway.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm sure, like I say, we can move some things around, particularly with our FCS opponent potentially. There's some things we can do. I don't know our non-conference dates for next year, but you can figure something out.
No doubt. All right. So you want to go to our first guest?
Yeah. Earlier today we caught up with the play-by-play voice of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Dave Nathan, and let's talk to him right now.
Well, you think about our next guest, you think about utility, you think about a lot of different titles, and certainly Mr. Clutch, and of course, Bubba, we got a very special guest.
Yeah, the Pirates are going to be at Boschmer Stadium tomorrow night, Wednesday, May the 8th, taking on the North Carolina Tar Heels, and now we're joined by the play-by-play voice of the Tar Heels, Dave Nathan. Dave, welcome to the show.
Guys, always good to be on with you. It's an exciting time of year where a lot of teams like Carolina and East Carolina are playing for those top eight national seeds and a chance to host for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, Dave, it's very nice to have a in-state opponent that actually will play us like that team in Raleigh. So anytime I can say that, I say it. Anyway, moving on to we're going to drop the podcast tonight. The game is going to be really interesting. And one thing that I love about you have a beautiful stadium there, Boschmer Stadium there at UNC.
Listen, I'm the first to say whenever we come back from a road trip how great it is to be back at the Bosch. We've got world-class views of the Diamonds, great facilities, great teams that come and go, fantastic folks that take care of the place. So I love being at the Bosch. It's great to have two games there this week. And like I said, hopefully we're there for a few more weeks after the end of the regular season.
No doubt about it.
I was going to say, talking about Boschmer Stadium, it's a place the Tar Heels are 28-3 this season. And as you just mentioned, tonight you guys at 6 o'clock are taking on the Winthrop Eagles. So talk a little bit about the Tar Heels. And I know the Tar Heels are coming off an open weekend, and the last game they played was last Tuesday when they took on the Liberty Flames, who were, of course, coached by former Tar Heel Scott Jackson.
Yeah, first and all, it was good to see Coach Jackson and Bryant Gaines, who used to play at Carolina last week. And as Coach Fox told me, he was excited to see those guys, but not real excited to see Liberty. And jumping out to a 9-0 lead before Liberty scored 5 runs in an inning made a game of it. But 11-5 was how that one went final. And you're right, since then it's been a lot of downtime for the Heels with the exam break. But they did get in some scrimmages over the course of the weekend, and that was important to keep guys fresh, especially for the upcoming weekend. And as you mentioned, playing 2 midweek games against programs at Calvert, Winthrop, and East Carolina, in some cases will be right at the level of ACC competition that we're used to. So we're getting right back on it here, and this will be a very important week for Carolina in terms of determining where they're going to go come later this month and maybe in the next.
No doubt about it. And both teams are top 25 programs, top 15 programs, if you will. And it's the reason I love this matchup is, you know, we were talking last year, you were on with us, Dave, about this time, about how great baseball is in North Carolina. And here we go again, all the different teams, including this particular matchup, East Carolina and North Carolina.
Yeah, you know, the thing I really like about East Carolina is, team, the way it's comprised of so many guys from the state of North Carolina, all parts, eastern and the central part of the state and western North Carolina. Coach Godwin's done a fantastic job of identifying talent in the state and developing it in Greenville, and I think the draft will reflect just how good some of those players are, like Packard and Brickhouse. And so there's no question East Carolina has carved out a great niche of talent in the state of North Carolina. And I don't know how many of those guys were recruited by ACC schools. If they weren't, I'm sure they still carry a pretty big chip on their shoulder. If they were, East Carolina's turned out to be the right place for them, because that's a program that's playing about as well as anybody in the area.
Yeah, and another thing, you were talking about Brian Packard. He's been dealing with a lot of adversity. Of course, he had the injuries at the beginning of the year, but his mother recently was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so it's just amazing to watch him, how well he's played, considering he says he's doing it for mom.
Well, listen, nobody could tell you what that young man's been going through, but how he's compartmentalized it, I don't know how to explain it, but from what he's done on the field, he's as good of a player as I think we've run into this year, and you certainly send your best out to his family and hope that everything's okay in the long run.
Yeah, and I want to talk about UNC as far as what can fans expect as far as we'll start off with pitching. Who's starting, and can you talk a little bit about the pitching this year?
Yeah, Andrew Grogan's going to get the start tomorrow, and he's turned into a pretty big addition for Carolina this year in that he came over from the junior college ranks after winning a couple of junior college World Series at Chipola, and has found a good spot in the midweek role and in some cases middle and long relief when the Tar Heels need him in a pinch over the course of a weekend. And it's those types of players that I think are just so important when you get into the postseason, because everybody's got an ace and a number two guy, but when you need a win in game three or game four, or you need to get through a rough patch, who do you go to? And I think Grogan can be one of those guys for Carolina. You know, there's nothing that'll just blow you away about his stuff, but he's super composed. And, again, with those experiences of winning a Junior College World Series twice over, ACC baseball and certainly playing a team of the caliber East Carolina hasn't intimidated him. And, again, as the season wears on, I think he's gotten better over the course of time.
Yeah, as far as Grogan's concerned, like you said, I noticed that he had been kind of a midweek role and relief role, 4-1 with about a 3.38 ERA. And he's worked a little over 40 innings, right at 40 innings on the season. Taking a look at your bullpen, is certainly one that really jumped out at me. Guys like Joey Lancelotti, Austin Love, who we talked a little bit about off the air, both of those guys have been very good.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you talk about the way that Packard at East Carolina has bounced back on the field despite some troubles off the field with his family. To bring that back to baseball, you know, the mind of a closer is something that really intrigues me, because things can go way south one day and you've got to get right back out there the next and pitch in a winning situation. And Austin's had a couple of difficult outings, but Coach Fox loves getting guys back out on the field ASAP in order to rectify some of those things. And Austin has responded and bounced back, it seems like, without fail every time. And so after Carolina loses Josh Hyatt last year in that closer's role, Love has been the go-to guy this year in that spot. And it's not easy. Again, when you get into postseason play and sometimes you see how starters can struggle in a role of relief, it really goes to accentuate the positives of what a guy like Austin Love and Joey Lancelotti and Grogan and those guys have been able to do without very much experience at all.
Dave, kind of transitioning to the offensive side of things, when you think about this Tar Heels lineup, it's one that's tremendously balanced. It's one that can hurt you from top to bottom, much like the ECU lineup. With the Tar Heels, you have six guys who have at least five home runs, five guys with 10-plus doubles. As a team, they have over 100 doubles now, and I guess leading the way, even though he's not tops in terms of average, you got to start with Michael Busch, of course, the tremendous outfielder and first baseman. He's batting right at 300, 12 home runs, 47 driven in.
Yeah, Coach Fox will be the first to tell you that average is maybe the most overrated stat in all of baseball, because Michael Busch, despite the fact that he can hit for power and he can hit in all the field, he takes a ton of walks and doesn't see a bunch of good pitches to hit game in and game out, but one way or another, he's found a way to knock a few of them out of the park this year, and in doing so has become the first Tar Heel since Chad Flack back in 2005 and 2006 to have consecutive years of 10 or more homers. So he's as consistent a hitter as I think Carolina has this year. You mentioned all those doubles that the Heels have pounded out. Two freshmen, Danny Cerretti and Aaron Sabato, have clobbered the ball this year. It hasn't taken them long to acclimate to major college baseball. Sabato's got as much power for a freshman as I can remember seeing here at Carolina, and Cerretti's had a couple of five-hit performances as a freshman, and that's not happened since Dustin Ackley back in 2009, and he was the number two pick in the draft the year that he came out. So those two guys are doing wonders for Carolina after he was lost so much last year. And then you've got the guy, Ike Freeman, that's moved over from shortstop to third base in the last month, that's hitting the ball well, hitting for power this year, has had a little less of a second half of this year than he did in the first half, but on the whole, he's been fantastic. So, yeah, there's consistency. There's more pop in the lineup this year from a power standpoint than there's been in the past. And Carolina, just as you said, from top to bottom, very balanced, and it's not an easy out from 1-9.
I'm talking about Michael Busch. You referenced the number of walks he has, which is somewhere like 45 or 50 walks, and you would expect a guy like Michael Busch to be walked quite a bit. But looking at the Tar Heels as a team, one of the things that really jumped off the page at me is how you have just as many free passes, 343, as you do strikeouts, 344.
Yeah, and just another quick note on the walks total. If you look at Carolina's total for hits this year, I think it's something like 13th in the ACC, which is near the bottom. But you juxtapose that with taking almost as many walks as anybody in the country, and still Carolina's finding their way on base. So they've been pretty resourceful in terms of getting runners on and then getting them in.
You know, one of the things, Dave, that comes to mind is I've said about the East Carolina team this year is injuries. We just found out, and Bubba let me know that right before we did the interview with you, that Trey Benton is out for the year. He had a starting role, and now he's been this year more of a reliever, maybe middle reliever, if you will. That's a tough break for the Pirates.
Well, there's no doubt, and that's the shame of playing sports in general, whether it's baseball or basketball or football or something else. Injuries are a part of it. You never know when they're going to happen. And on that subject, Carolina's been dealing with injuries to Gianluca Delatri, who was as talented a freshman as Carolina had coming in a few years ago. And I don't know when, but missed a good chunk of last year to injury. Undergoing hip surgery this week, hasn't pitched in a while. You hope that you can get a guy like that back maybe for another year unless professional baseball intervenes. But that's where coaches develop depth and teams can show their real metal, because most everybody's got a few stars here or there. But the question is, if somebody goes down and you need a role player to step up, how prepared is that person? How engaged are they? And I think your coaching staff and the makeup of your team have a lot to say with whose focus is on baseball game in and game out, especially when you're needed.
Dave, you obviously talk to Coach Fox on a regular basis, and here recently the decision to or whether to have the opportunity to pay a third assistant was shot down, unfortunately. So what are Coach Fox's thoughts on that? Has that subject come up with you guys?
You know, I've not talked to him about that. I hate to even speculate on what his thoughts were on that without having talked to him about it first, and that's something that I've just not had a lot of time to follow this year. But I do know that's been an issue in some baseball circles, and I'm guessing most coaches would be for it, but the powers that be that have votes on these things, for whatever reason, have decided against it.
One of the things, Dave, that's been interesting to me is the very fact that maybe I'm not Mr. Conspiracy Theory. I'm wondering if they want to keep baseball as a more niche sport when there's a lot of places like Carolina and East Carolina, NC State, Duke. There's a lot of places where baseball is really growing and has a chance to not be actually be a for-profit sport.
Listen, I mean, the popularity of baseball in the last several years speaks for itself. If you've been to Omaha and you see the different types of people that come in and out of that city on a yearly basis, it's an event where you don't even have to have a team that you're a fan of to enjoy the event and watch eight teams play game in and game out. For as easy as it is to get into some of these postseason events like the Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals are going on right now, the College World Series is as easy a thing to get into as sports as there is, whether or not you follow the regular season, which, again, with the advent of the SEC Network and the ACC Network coming down the pike, the Big Ten Network showcases a bunch of baseball on its channel. The popularity of baseball is growing, I think, as fast as maybe any of the major sports. And so, again, for whatever reason that these paid third assistant coaches either are or not happening, I don't think you can deny the fact that college baseball's popularity is soaring.
Yeah, and Dave, when you know, the biggest thing going into is my coach when I was in high school baseball, he said, finish strong. I know with Carolina, how is the keep seeing a lot of commercials on television for the ACC tournament. I know there's a couple more weeks left, but what are your thoughts going into in just a couple weeks for ending the regular season into the ACC tournament?
Well, listen, I'm a big fan of the ACC tournament in Durham because that's fewer miles than I got to travel to get to the ballpark game in and game out. Folks in Durham have been a fantastic host for I don't know how long, and you know there are going to be some big-time teams that get there. I don't know if this year's ACC has the star power in terms of a handful of teams that have a shot at winning the College World Series, as is often the case, but I can't think back to a time where the ACC, you know, maybe outside of Pittsburgh based on their record, and we'll get a chance to see Pittsburgh coming up this weekend, but they're just grouped so tightly in terms of conference record, and it's amazing that Carolina's only dropped two series this year, and both of those were on the road, and Carolina had chances to win both of them at Georgia Tech and Clemson. But just the week-to-week struggles of playing in this league are evident. And when you get all these teams on the same field in the same span of a few days, I think it'll even be more so of just how difficult it is to win one game, let alone three or four to win the actual ACC baseball championship.
When it comes to Selection Monday, do you have an idea of how many do you think right now would out of the ACC would go?
That's another good question. I've not looked at it that close. I've just gotten to the point in the year where I've started to look at who's got a shot to host and some of these top eight national seeds. And with Louisville as the best team in the conference, I think they'd be the front runner certainly to be a top eight national seed. Georgia Tech, I don't think will be too far away based off of what we saw from them. And from a lineup perspective, they're as good offensively as any team that I've seen, although they did just sustain a season-ending injury to one of their starting pitchers, and that's a question for them when you get into their bullpen of how good can they be. And then you've got, you know, the usual suspects like Clemson and Florida State and Carolina. Miami, I think, has an outside shot maybe to get into the top 16 someplace. So, again, with 2 weeks to go, a lot of this stuff will play itself out, but I've not looked hard enough to know exactly how many from the ACC will be there.
As we're coming down the stretch, as Dave mentioned, what do you think as far as what exactly do the Tar Heels need to do to go ahead and solidify that host spot? They're in excellent shape at this point, but to go ahead and nail things down.
Well, obviously, winning these two midweek games this week will help, and then going to Pittsburgh and winning that series. Carolina's been so good in some cases on the road this year. And then with North Carolina State coming to town at the very end of the season, you win those last two series, and North Carolina State record-wise is comparable to Carolina. From a strength of schedule and RPI standpoint, I think the nod would go to the Tar Heels, but sometimes these impressions of what happens at the end of the schedule are lasting. So if Carolina wants to solidify itself as a top 16 seed and as a host for at least the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, you have to take care of business and win your last two ACC series and have that win total jump up somewhere close to 20 if you want to put that conversation to rest.
Hey, Dave, it's going to be interesting. I tell you what, I'm so excited, and I know the Pirates have been doing very well. North Carolina's doing very well, as always. We love Coach Fox, and you know, Bubba and I both have boys playing baseball, and I think it's fair to say, Bubba, that you know, when you go to Carolina and you have Coach Mike Fox, that he'll look out for you.
Yeah, you could tell early in the year when we had Coach Fox on to talk about things prior to the season that he's certainly someone who loves his players and will go to bat for him and that sort of thing. So definitely a lot of respect for him. And whether you like the Tar Heels or not, you certainly have to respect what he's done at UNC over the last two decades plus.
No doubt. 21 years coaching here at Carolina, played here at Carolina, coached at North Carolina Wesleyan before he was here. He's never spent any time outside the state. So whatever your allegiance is, again, to get back to how baseball is booming now throughout the country, you love the fact that you've got a guy in your state that's achieved at the success of Coach Fox and all he's done for baseball within the state of North Carolina, and working alongside him day in and day out. He's a joy to work with. He makes my job so much easier, you know, in a lot of respects because he wins so much, but just a class act all the way around. And I hope folks on the outside see that reflected in this program and the players who have come through over the passage of time.
Dave, I was going to ask you, as far as the crowd tomorrow night, what do you guys expect for the top 10 matchup between the Pirates and the Tar Heels?
All right, it'll be big. I mean, the weather's going to be fine. School's out. And on our show yesterday, Coach Fox made mention he expects to see some East Carolina colors there, but it'd be nice to see some light blue. And if you got dark blue, you can wear that as well, or white, whatever you want to wear. But I think he anticipates this will be a pretty hotly contested game, both on the field and in the stands. And listen, you guys know as well as anybody the passion that burns inside the Pirate Nation. And for the quick two-hour trip that it might take to get over here to Chapel Hill, I firmly expect there to be a bunch of ECU fans here at the box.
Are there any tickets available right now?
Again, I've not checked, but I'm guessing that there probably would be. And if folks are interested in finding out more about the ticket situation, I'd send them to GoHeels.com, and they can navigate the website from there.
All right. Well, Dave, Nathan, I appreciate you, buddy, and I know you do a great job for the network, and we're looking forward to the games being tonight. And good luck to the Heels and the Pirates, and we'll see how things work out.
Dave, us Daves have to stick together. And Bubba, always good to catch up with you guys. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate Dave very much. He's tremendous. And actually, good luck to the Pirates. And it's going to be a great game, Pirates and the Tar Heels. And that should be great at Bossemer Stadium tonight. And Dave does a fantastic job. And put it with me for about 5 years in Raleigh radio. So that should be tremendous. You know, guys, we have another great guest. I want to get to him. I know Bubba, a great official, football and college for many years, 36 years, Wingate College president, and so much more, right?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier in the opening, distinguished alumnus of East Carolina, and then I went on to a tremendous career in university administration as the president at Wingate University from 1992 to 2015. And then, as you said, 36 years as a football official, starting off in the Division II level and then working his way up through the ranks. And they worked three national championship games. And let's go to that interview now with Dr. Jerry McGee.
Well, one of the great things about doing this podcast is we learned how many great people have graduated from East Carolina and very distinguished. And Bubba, we have a great guest now.
Yeah, we're very excited to have with us Dr. Jerry McGee. Dr. McGee, he's recognized, as Dave mentioned, as a distinguished alumnus of East Carolina University. He played baseball for the Pirates in the early 60s and then went on to a lot of great things in his life. Dr. McGee, welcome in.
Well, thank you. It's delighted to talk to East Carolina friends.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. We wanted to talk about your career. How did you – can you tell us about how you how did you land at East Carolina?
Well, I was a Mill Hill kid down in Rockingham, and I wanted to try to play baseball, but not too many people were interested in a 5 foot 935-pound third baseman. But East Carolina won the national championship in baseball in NAIA when I was a high school senior, and I wanted so badly to try to be a part of that program, and followed a lot of my buddies down there, and some of us made the teams, those didn't make the team, but we all wound up getting our degrees in East Carolina and going on and leading a pretty successful life.
Now, Dr. McGee, you arrived at ECU, and here, as I mentioned, in the early 60s, the Pirates, I believe it was 1961, and that we had won the national title?
That's correct, and I got to visit with that team when I went down for a recruiting visit, and I was just in awe. Those guys loved the game just like I did, and it was tough to make a team down there back in those days because most any kid that could play baseball in East North Carolina wanted to play for the Pirates. But in 1963, I was fortunate enough to be on the team that had a great season, and the team made it to the NAIA College World Series again and finished third. But I think that's the last time we've been to a College World Series in baseball, and we're all very hopeful about the team this year.
There's no doubt about that. Now, Dr. McGee, when you were playing at ECU, that was prior to Harrington Field, when the field was located over in the main campus area, correct?
Yeah, we actually we played our games at Guy Smith, the old minor league park across town, my freshman year, they played right in the center of campus, right behind the old gym. But then our practice field, my sophomore year, was over where the teams play their games now, but it was just a field, and we had a little backstop there and practice there, and then we, of course, went across town for our games. But that, you know, I've laughed so much about that team, Bubba. That was the rebuilding year. This was, everybody said, oh, well, we've been pretty good for a while, but boy, the 63 team's not going to be very good. We had a freshman and two sophomore catchers. We had two sophomore first basemen, a freshman a second baseman, a sophomore shortstop, freshman center fielder. Almost all the pitchers were freshmen and sophomore, and so all they did was. But they had the great chemistry. We all loved one another. We had fun together, and and wound up having a lot of success.
Yeah, Dr. McGee, I wanted to ask as far as after you your time at East Carolina, where did you go next?
Well, it was funny because I always wanted to be a high school teacher and coach. And then when I got near graduation and I was offered a couple of coaching jobs and found out that for my 60-hour weeks I was going to make about $450 a month, and I thought, you know, I can't take care of my wife and family for that. So I wound up going into the textile business as an engineer and hated every day of it. And when I did my Army stuff and came back home, then I wound up going to work with the community college and found my groove there. And instead of education, then until I retired as president of Lincoln in 2015.
Now, Dr. McGee, starting back in the early 70s, I guess it was, is when you began officiating football, and you started off what the South Atlantic Conference, the old SAC 8, as they called it, and then worked your way up through the ranks. You officiated the Big South, the Yankee Conference, which is now a lot of those Yankee Conference teams are CAA teams, like James Madison and William & Mary, not necessarily those teams, but those are the teams that are in that league currently. And then, of course, the Big East and ACC. So talk a little bit about your experience as an official and all those big-time bowl games that you called. And I think you actually even had a couple of Army-Navy games.
Yeah, I did. In fact, it's a little-known fact that my officiating career began at East Carolina, too. I refereed intramural football games. And just for so I'd have a little social money for the weekend. But I always said if you can successfully officiate a Pica and Sigma Nu at East Carolina, you could do Army Navy or Michigan Notre Dame with no problem, because those were some pretty competitive games as well. But I was real blessed to be in a high school group where we had a retiring college official who literally just almost forced them to give me a chance and appreciate small college football. And I went there and had some success and started doing playoff games and that sort of stuff pretty soon. And I was brought into the ACC back in the early 80s. And back in those days, we didn't expect to get a bowl game because it was only like 12 bowls. So if you got a bowl game, it was a great experience for you. But I started doing bowl games pretty routinely. And then found myself working, a lot of the more important collegiate games in the country. And looking back on my career now, I've worked about all of them from Southern Cal to Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan, Florida, Florida State, Army, Navy, two Rose Bowls, three national championships. So I was very, very blessed, and I was fortunate enough not to get injured very much, and I worked 36 years in college football, which is a little longer than most guys make it.
Yes, sir. When you take a look back at your career officiating, talking about some of the big time coaches, and you had the opportunity to officiate their games and that sort of thing. Are there some stories that you can share with us that are suitable for our listeners that kind of give you a behind the scenes look? At some point, a lot of our listeners have probably seen a behind the scenes NFL or college show, like where you have a coach and players mic'd up and that sort of thing. So, what are some funny stories that you have to share with us from down through the years?
Well, it was I really enjoyed the coach, those legendary coaches like Johnny Majors and Vince Dooley and Bill Dooley and and Bobby Bowden. I loved working for those guys because they didn't have time for us. They were busy coaching, and they whatever we call, they went on with it. And when they liked it or not, they got ready for the next play. And they were really, really fun to be around. A little known fact about officials is we're terrible practical jokers. And I have officiated one game. I wear a 9.5 shoe. I officiated one game with for two left football cleats, left-footed football cleats size 11 because somebody stole my shoes the night before the games. But lots of little fun things like that that we enjoyed. And then there's always give and take on the sideline. And I always remember my buddy Danny Ford used to always look me straight in the eye and say, "Jay, I don't want anything given to me today. I just want a fair advantage." I said, "Well, Coach, if you get a fair advantage, the guy on the other side will get an unfair advantage. We'll work it the best we can." But I love to some of the stories are pretty long, but things like actually, we lost the football during the game at Clemson one day. I ran over to the sideline, ran over to the lounge judge, and I said, "Where's the ball?" He said, "Hell, I don't know." And I'm standing there. He's got a spot, and I'm scratching my head, and we're looking 5 yards up the field. Some kid's down on the sideline with a football. And somehow he had gotten the football during the play. But a lot of crazy things happen on the field that nobody else notices but us. And we just go on and just play the game and don't worry about it. But it's I'm trying to write a book. My son Ryan, of course, is the New York Times best-selling author, so he's trying to help me write a book. But I told him that I couldn't say everything I wanted to say until some people died. And, some of those stories would be terribly incriminating. But it was we had a great relationship with the coaches and players, and the players very seldom ever say anything to us. They just they talk a little bit to the guy in front of them, but it was just a great game to be a part of. It was great to evolve with the game. Heck, when I started officiating, you had 12 passes a game. Nobody could put the ball more than 30 yards. Never saw a field goal. And now the whole game is maybe I just spread one in the field or the other. When we first added the side judge in the ACC, I was 8 yards downfield. My last game I officiated, I was 28 yards downfield. Because the game has just spread, they spread the field so much and throwing the ball so deep, man. We got so much speed that it's just a whole different game than the one I grew up with.
Coach, I was going to ask, Coach, Dr. McGee, I was going to ask you about coaches. Are there any coaches that really you had really a difficult time dealing with? Or I know that are there ones that maybe that most fans would think they're difficult to deal with, but they're easy to get along with?
Yeah, there's a couple of names that come to mind. People know me. No, I get along about anybody. But Chuck Amato was really hard to love when he was at NC State. Tommy Bowden was really hard to love when he was at Clemson. And I think in both cases, looking back on it, I think they might have been a little bit in over their heads. So they had to lash out at somebody. They were very very difficult to work with. George Welch at Virginia got a tough rap of being bad on officials. He never said a word to us. He was tough on his assistants. And sometimes, like he's yelling at us, he was yelling at them. But most of them were just too busy doing their job, you know, to have time to mess with us very much. But it was it's a great run, and I don't regret a day of it. I give up a whole lot of Saturdays over 36 years.
One of the characters I wanted to ask you about is Steve Spurrier. Now, obviously, Coach Spurrier is very well known for some of the lines that he would use at press conferences and that sort of thing. How was Coach Spurrier on the sidelines?
He was great. we had what we call the SAT Bowl one night at Duke. It was a Vanderbilt and Duke. Probably more doctors and lawyers on that field tonight than we could ever imagine playing football. But there was a play on the sideline. It was freaking pouring rain. Oh, my God, it was raining so hard. And a guy from Vanderbilt was trying to catch a pass and get out of bounds to stop the clock so he could try a field goal. And he caught the ball. He's going out of bounds. And I was giving him the timeout signal, and then I realized his knee hit just inbound. And I was like, oh, God. I still found the clock. But I did not stop the clock. And so right behind me, I heard this voice. What the hell was that? I knew exactly who it was, Coach Spurrier. I didn't turn around. I just said, that was temporary insanity, Coach. Leave me alone. And so he walked off. Well, they fortunately, Vanderbilt missed the field goal. When I go into halftime to get the captain, Coach Spurrier said, can I speak to you a minute? I said, sure. He walked outside and he said, that's the funniest line I've ever heard on the football field. You better be glad he missed that damn field goal. And I said, trust me, I was praying he would miss the field goal. It's the only time I've ever been on the golf course, I was hoping the guy would miss the field goal. But there's little things like that happen, and you know, you make mistakes, and hope you don't hurt anybody, but you're 100% of the officials are human, at least at this point. And back then, we had no instant replay. You couldn't get any help on anything. You just had to do the best you could. I think the officiating might have been better back then than it is now.
Well, that's one of the questions I had, Dr. McGee, is the very fact of just like what we dealt with the Kentucky Derby on Saturday night. Do you think, I don't want to get in that topic other than just to say, do you think instant replay hurts or do you think it helps? Is there, to me, I can tell you Bubba and I are going to East Carolina games and it feels like the games between the commercials, which we understand why they have to have commercials to get paid. I'm in the radio business and television business, but when it comes to the college football games, when everybody talks about Major League Baseball, I said, my God, college football game seems to last forever. And one of the reasons is instant replay. Do you like it or not?
I don't like it. It's, I think, as most things happen, we carry things a little bit too far. I think there was probably you could use it to help at the goal line sometime when there's 22 guys that weigh over 250 pounds in a big pile, it's kind of hard to find the ball. But something like that, you might could use some help on or a dive at the pylon or something. But it seems to me now that we've got a whole group of officials that have grown up with replay. So if you watch carefully, any time there's a fumble or not a fumble, it's always a fumble. So replay can fix it. If it's inbounds or out of bounds, it's always inbounds. The replay can fix it. But what happens is you make that call, and some replay can fix it, and they don't get a good look at it. And now you're stuck with the call that was made on the field. There wasn't the call that the person maybe thought it should be. It was a call that he thought could be fixed. So I think it's, you go some games, you don't maybe have one replay, you go some games and you have four quarter. It's just according to who's in the booth. And some of those guys in the replay booth work awfully hard at it and do a great job. Some others probably were not the people I put up there. But it's, I don't see how it affects the game very much. I think it's made the fishers a little bit lazy. And, you see the call, you make the call. And if replay can fix it, fine. If you can't fix it, fine. Go on, you play. But, 12 games season, I think those things kind of even out. And I don't like replay the way we're doing it. Maybe there's somewhere we can do it to make it better. And I think it's completely ruined Major League Baseball.
And, Dr. McGee, as far as player safety, I certainly, with all the improvements and the knowledge we have in terms of concussions and those sorts of things, I certainly understand the emphasis being placed on that area. But at the same time, as a coach and a former player, it's very frustrating to see guys, just the game so fast. You know that. You've been right there when it's been taking place, obviously. So I think it needs to be very blatant for a guy to be tossed from a game because they work too hard year-round to have those opportunities to see them taken away on something that's not malicious.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's the biggest problem with college football right now is I think we're a little too quick to toss a guy out of the game. And most of the time, 80-90% of the time, you know if a guy's headhunting out there. You see him load up and go after the guy. But you got a 240-pound running back, and he doesn't want to be tackled. He's lowering his head. And the defender's coming in, he's lowering his head. How much is going to hit, And I think the thing I'm most proud of in my sports career was I was, as President Wingate, I was I chaired a national committee for college football in Division II, and we completely revolutionized the preseason workouts and that sort of stuff, you know, not no consecutive two-a-days and that sort of thing. And we wrote, we changed everything in Division II, and it went so well that Division III and Division I copied us. But it made preseason much safer for kids. You got to always be looking for things like that. But I think we've I think the targeting is a well-intended move, and it's also kind of become a farce.
I certainly agree. I think there's no doubt that people's hearts are in the right place, but a lot of times. I think it's too quick to pull the trigger, as we said. Somebody else, I doubt you've had any direct association or run-ins with this guy in terms of refereeing, because he spent the most of his time in the professional ranks before coaching a little bit in the FCS level at Portland State. But Jerry Glanville seems like he would have been quite a hoot on the sideline, because I've seen some behind-the-scenes stuff with him. And I know he said I think he was the one that coined the NFL not for long. And
that was a hoot, wasn't it?
And then also there was another time where I'm trying to remember the comment he said. But Jerry Glanville, I can only imagine being an official. That's what he just said. He said something to the effect of he said, "Wait until you see that call on replay." He said, "You're gonna hate yourself." And then the guy said, "I already hate myself." He said, "Well, good." He said, "I hate you too."
Well, I remember Lou Holtz when he was at Notre Dame, a friend of mine went up to officiate and just made a terrible call in the first quarter. And Coach Holtz came up to him between the first and second quarters and said, "You bring your camera with you?" The guy said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, take a lot of pictures of Notre Dame because you're never going to see it again." And I thought that was pretty good. But those guys are, you know, they're out there. I always reminded the officials the game is not about us. If we get out here and do this game and leave and nobody knows we were here, we've had a good day. Officials are just a necessary part of the game, but we need to kind of do our jobs and get out of there. But the players and the coaches, gosh, they work 365 days a year, and they got 12 or 13 days a year to show people they can do their jobs. And we don't want to interfere with that. You know, you want to step in. If somebody gets an unfair advantage, you want to step in and correct it. But, gosh, you don't want to take away a great play or take away a guy's chance to do something special out there.
And, right.
And young officials have to be reminded of that pretty often. It's not about us. It's about them. And we're just we're like a goalpost. We're just part of the game.
I guess a good analogy would be as an official, you're kind of like a deep snapper, where if somebody knows your name and that kind of thing, it's not a good thing.
Right.
That's exactly right. I always loved it when I was I would have a friend of the game, and I'd see him next week, and he says, "I was at Wake Forest last weekend. Where were you?" I said, "I was at Wake Forest too, but I'm really happy you didn't notice me." But that's the idea. Get in there and do your job as quietly and as effectively and as professionally as you can. Slide on out of there if you don't.
And there are a lot of people that would – I was just going to say a lot of – Dr. Miguel, there's a lot of referees, I think, well, not a lot, but there are some, I should say, rather is a better choice of words, is that they want to be a part of the spotlight and they want to be part of the TV, the FaceTime, if you will, and they make calls and you're like, how in the world did they make that call? And I know there's instances where you can't see the play like we can because it's on television and there's a closer look when they're – there's an angle, right, that we can see that maybe you can't see on the field.
Yep. But you know, it's our job to see it. You know, you can always hide behind, well, a guy ran up in me in the play, or I didn't get a good look at it. Well, why didn't you get a good look at it? Let's look at that. You were put out here to make that call. That's 160 plays in a game, 180 plays in a game. My mother could make call, never called but about four. we're out there to make the tough 4 or 5 calls a game. So you've got to be able to see it. You got to get yourself in position to see it. You got to make the call. And I never had much time for a guy who said, well, I just didn't get a good look at it. Well, hell, it's your job to get a good look at it. You got to get a good look at it. And if you don't, there's 7 other guys out there. Maybe one of them can help you. But somehow you got to make the call. You can't hide behind the fact that I didn't see it. No, you got to see it. As hard as it is sometimes.
Now, Dr. McGee, I talked about how many bowl games you'd worked and that sort of thing, and you'd really called what all the major bowl games with the exception of the Sugar Bowl. I don't think you'd done a Sugar Bowl. I may be mistaken there, but talk about I think you've done at least one, maybe 2 or 3 national championship games. I think the most recent was in 2009, the BCS title game that year. Was that Oklahoma, or who was that one?
Yeah. It was Oklahoma was number one, and Florida was number two.
Yeah,
Florida,
with Tim Tebow.
Florida beat them. It was a great Sam Bradford and Tim Tebow game. It was a great game, and I tell you what, a highlight of that game was for me is we had a 7 officials in that game, and 2 were East Carolina grads. I was in the game, and of course Darrell Harrison from Greenville was in the game, and so we really enjoyed. As far as we knew, only 2 East Carolina guys officiating college football in America, and we both had a national championship. But yeah, I was. It was funny when I got that last hit. I did the 1990 Orange Bowl was a national championship, and that was Notre Dame and Colorado, then they had a national championship from Rose Bowl in Arizona State and Ohio State, and then it was my last game. But all the bowl games were fun. The Rose Bowl was special. The Cotton Bowl was special to me. The Orange Bowl was special. I love the Florida Bowl, the Gator Bowl, the Citrus Bowl. I did a couple of those. And I think I did 26 postseason games altogether. And like you said, I was in the wrong league. When I was in the ACC, the Big East got the Sugar Bowl, and I came back to ACC. One of the Big East and ACC got the Sugar Bowl, so I never had a chance to get it.
Now, Dr. McGee, I'm sorry.
It would have been fun, I'm sure, but I got to officiate in the Super Bowl a few times, so at least I was down there.
I was going to ask you, not in terms of specifics, but just generally speaking, in terms of officials' compensation compared to where you started and compared to where you finished and just several years ago now. Over that 3.5 decades or so, you obviously saw tremendous increases in coaches' salaries. So how did the compensation for officials change?
It got a lot better. I went from $200 and a little bit of travel to almost $2,000 at the end. But in football, you can only work so many games. You know, a full schedule is considered 10, 11 games. There were a few years I had 14, 15 games. But the guys that are killing it and officiating are the elite college basketball guys. They get $3,000 a game, and they work 90 games. So they can make a living doing it. We just supplement our income with football, because you can only make a little bit. It's always enough to pay for my son's college tuition, or pay for a nice trip or something for our family. But it was all about love of the game.
Are you familiar at all with Division I umpires? I know it, I'm sure, varies from conference to conference, but just generally, well, approximately, what do they make?
Yeah, I have no idea about baseball. I just never in fact, that's what I wanted to officiate. But when I was trying to do I did high school baseball, basketball, and football, but the problem was the baseball games were played in the daytime. And I was a young professional, and I couldn't get off in the daytime. And but I have no idea what they're making now. It has to be much better than it was a few years ago, because you know, you got the TV cameras, you got the 6,000 people at college baseball games now. So I'm sure it's has improved dramatically.
Dr. McGee, have you had the opportunity to watch any Pirate baseball this year?
I have, and I'll tell you, this team is really, really talented, as you know. But I think they got this thing going for them. I think they got the love of the game. They got the love of one another. They trust one another, and I think they might have that special something extra that can carry them a long way. You can tell they don't get down. They rebound quickly when they have a loss, and they really seem to be enjoying the game. And I'll tell you, when you play a sport, whether it's golf or football or baseball, when you're playing with joy, you're playing your best. And those guys are having a good time. And I think they really they got a great atmosphere in the dugout, and obviously got very fine coaching leadership, as you know. And this team could do something very special.
Before we let you go, because we know we've certainly been or you've been very generous with your time, and we've enjoyed chatting with you. I did want to ask you about during your time at ECU, you talked about officiating intramurals. I know you said, I think you maybe gave up baseball the last year or two of your college career, and you had a close association with Dr. Jack Boone. So can you talk a little bit about Dr. Jack Boone and what he meant to you and just the type of man he was? Because obviously he was someone who was very influential at ECC.
Yeah, he really saved my college career. As I told you, I was a textile kid, and if your parents worked in a textile mill in Rockingham, the mill would usually give you a job in the summer. It'd be the nastiest job and first shift job in the middle of the night, but at least you got a job, you can make enough money to go back to school. But after my sophomore year, they quit hiring. And so it was really, really hard to try to make enough money to go to school. I had to stay out of school to work to make enough money to get back in school. And when I got back, Coach Boone sent for me, and I went to talk to him, and he said he wanted me to be the student director of intramurals. And I thought, gosh, Coach Boone, I'd love to do it. I just can't. I'm trying to play baseball. I'm trying to work part-time. Trying to study. And he said, before you turn me down, it pays a half scholarship.
Yeah.
And I took the job. But his office was next door to Coach Smith's office. And so it created a tough situation because I couldn't be the intramural director and invest in baseball like I should. But he really saved me financially because after that meeting with him, when I was walking back up to the dorm from the hill, I thought for the first time, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to be able to finish college. And had it not been for him and that job offer, I'm really not sure I would have had the opportunity to complete my degree. So I've always loved him and appreciated him. And I'm actually working with the school now to try to do something in his memory on the campus. And I hope they're going to let me do that. But he was the football coach for a long time, beloved football coach, and he kind of got pushed aside so they could hire Coach Clarence Stafford. But he didn't leave. He stayed there because kids were in school and doing well, and he finished his career there. But he just was a very humble and special man.
An alum of East Carolina University, of course, it was East Carolina College.
Well, Dr. McGee, thank you so much. Bubba had to get back to his real job.
Maybe we can get Ryan
going.
We appreciate you so much
for your time.
Hopefully we can have Dr. McGee back on for more stories. And if he has that book he was talking about that Ryan's trying to get him to write, I will most certainly have him on for that as well. You know, guys, I'm very excited about upcoming things for us. And as a matter of fact, I was thinking about this the other day. Last year, Kyle and I were talking about doing the watch party, and I'm putting you guys on the spot, but we got so many great guys that we've met over the years over the last year or so with Terry Gallagher, different folks. And if you're wondering what is the watch party, we're actually going to watch.
It's kind of like a Tupperware party, except we're going to get a bunch of listeners together and we're going to sell watches. You're going to have like Fossil, Apple Watch. We're going to have some 80 Swatch watches. Swatch. You know, so it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be like one of those sex toy parties, except it's going to be watches. So,
wow.
Yeah. You looking forward to that? You looking forward to a bubble?
I was afraid where that conversation or where this conversation is going to go, Kyle.
Oh, what kind of watch party are you interested in, Bubba? Hey, now, wait a minute.
We're talking about on YouTube where you're watching old football games for East Carolina and we'll have former players.
Okay, I was getting confused. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have that coming up this summer. We're going to be – that's R&D. We're working
watch
on
along
right
party.
Now.
We're going to watch some football games, talk about them. We're going to have former players that played in those games hopefully join us. And comment on them and
talk about the national analyst that couldn't get David Girard's name right. Talking about David Girard.
The Girard is it Girard? Girard.
Yeah. And we have
Girard. He plays for Eastern Carolina. That David Girard.
Yeah, Eastern Carolina and Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah, the Eastern Carolina Panthers in Greenville, South Carolina. That David Girard.
Well, that sounds good.
But guys, talking about being called the Eastern Carolina Pirates, I think the most ridiculous I heard was back in the, I guess it was early 90s. I was up in Boone for a basketball game between App State and the Pirates, and there was a guy on the local campus station, and some guy that obviously just had no clue about sports, but he was talking about how they needed to get out to Varsity Gym to support the App State men's basketball team in their big game against the East Coast Pirates.
East Coast.
You know, me and my dad just looked at each other, and the East Coast Pirates. I said, what is this idiot talking about?
How about the there used to be in Greenville, and now it's a insurance place, Charles, near the, not too far up from the stadium, Charles and 14th. There used to be a place called East Coast Music and Video in Greenville, and back in the day. So
when you said video. East Coast,
maybe think
of video.
Exactly. So I was even thinking.
Come in to East Coast Music and Video. Get the latest and greatest in cassette tapes.
Yes, sir.
Car stereos.
Kyle, when we have sponsors, you need to do some. Yeah.
You know, I'm planning on getting my truck. I picked up painted at Mako, Bubba, in Greenville. When I walk in there, I'm going to tell them I got a podcast. And if you do a good job on my truck, I'm going to talk about you on the podcast. And if you do a bad job on my truck, I'm going to talk about you on the podcast.
Just either way,
like Clip Brock singing the fight song for Wasabi 88.
Here for Wasabi 88.
Hey, Wasabi, yeah, we love sushi. Come on and be a sponsor. There you go.
Go, Wasabi 88.
Yeah. Well, we don't need to steal sponsors from other people, but anybody out there that wants to sponsor this podcast, we're willing to take some sponsorship. We take cash, personal check, money order. Gift cards.
Traveler checks.
Traveler checks, gift cards.
Yes,
favors,
pieces.
Wink,
yes.
Wink, nod, nod, Hooters. Whichever way you want to pay.
Yeah, there you go. So we're definitely going to have that here this year, next year for sure. A lot of people inquiring about how they can become a sponsor. So you can just simply email us.
Acquiring minds want to know.
TheSportsOBJ@gmail.com if you're interested in being a sponsor. And certainly – that'll be tremendous. Can I just, I won't, before we go.
Absolutely not.
I want to, I'm going to do a Kyle right here because how many of you watched the Kentucky Derby on Saturday night? Or do you even care?
I didn't watch it.
I did not watch it.
I guess that's the point. They have the Super Bowl racing, the Super Bowl of horse racing with being the Kentucky Derby, and they totally screwed up. They had the 145th. Running of the Kentucky Derby, and basically they disqualified the front runner as he was impeding other horses. And that was a real outrage for me because imagine seeing the best horse and he wins he's ahead the whole entire race. And you have people object now. So basically what you do, if you don't agree with the outcome, you just object. And there was not enough for it to be there. I was very upset that, like, that's your biggest day of your sport. And I was thinking about that with college football. Or can you imagine, like, having a winner and say, no, you didn't win. It was, the
second place team. I mean, I was just thinking how outrageous.
What? You mean having a fake winner that really
shouldn't have been,
that they're the champion? That's college football every year.
He shouldn't have been such a horse's ass and got out of the way.
Thank you, Bubba. Yes.
Yes, it's just full of horses.
But anyway, I'm sure that another thing is people don't care about horse racing, so that should they should know. The only people,
and
the reason why people
come. The six that come and Mama's purse is in the lead, followed by Geronimo's asshole. In third is Banana Split, in fourth is Little Monkey Leg. And now the six that come.
That's why I love the sport, is the names of the horses they come up with. Like, they had in one of the earlier races, the prelims, they had a horse by the name of Mr. Moneybags, and I pulled for him and he won.
The names are just ridiculous.
I love the name.
Oh.
Geronimo, that's home.
Well, where do I go here? I guess we need to wrap things up. I know a lot of people. By the way, before we go, I want to mention for folks, today we had in Williamston, they had the Pirate Armada at lunchtime. And I know, Bubba, we're going to try to get some folks.
What did they have it at, Dave?
Deadwood.
Deadwood?
At noon today, yep.
At noon. Did they have the kitchen staff there for lunch on a weekday?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
All right. Is Deadwood still good? I hadn't eaten there in years. They used to have good burgers.
We need to, they do.
Is Deadwood like Bushwood?
Deadwood is like an old, it's like South Dakota. Like Deadwood, South Dakota, it's like the old West. And they
it started off years ago, Bubba. It started off as like an outdoor, it had like mini golf.
Right.
And it had a stage, and they'd have a musical act on the weekend, and then they build a little club and people used to go to Deadwood.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's a unfortunately. Have bands and stuff, and then they opened a restaurant. And at one time, Dave, I don't know if they ever did anything with it. They bought a bunch of old carnival rides.
They still have those, yeah.
Did they ever get them operational?
They've got like a roller coaster. They have a train. Okay. Those two things come to mind. They have a really nice playground. The kids, Riley and Reese, would love it, and our kids. That's what's great about going there is if it's a long wait.
Yeah.
Like, say, 45 minutes or an hour.
Didn't they open an ice cream shop that you can walk?
They have an ice cream parlor,
yeah,
arcade. Yeah, a few games there.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've been, but we used to – me and Jessica used to go visit my dad a lot more than we do now. Not because I don't want my dad, just because we're in our 30s and don't have time. And we used to visit my dad up in Williamson quite a bit when we were in our 20s. And we'd go to Deadwood on the weekend while we were there.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Speaking of the Pirate Club Armada, as I know you were about to ask a moment ago, we're going to have Chase Blake, who works for the Pirate Club and is stationed out here in Charlotte. So we're going to catch up with Chase, and then also Sean Kays, who's our new chapter president. He took over for Doug Groom, who did a tremendous job for the last several years. So we'll catch up with Chase Blake and Sean Kays from the Charlotte Pirate Club here in the next few days. And then we'll also be talking to Kyle Peterson. So anyone that follows college baseball, much like Mike Rooney, Kyle Peterson is someone you hear every year during regional, super regional, of course, the CWS. So it's going to be great to catch up with him and hear his thoughts on Cliff Godwin's club as well as other teams around the nation.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I tell you what, guys, I'm excited about the Pirates. The last 2 weeks of the regular season, there's no more classes anymore. The exams are out of the way. It'll be interesting to see the GPA. It was around 3.5 last semester. So when we talk to Coach Godwin on the podcast, we'll see how they ended up. But certainly I know they did well in the classroom, and I knew they're doing as well on the field. We'll see how it goes tonight. Good luck to them. And we have Wichita State this weekend. Like we said, next week, folks, will be the last week of the regular season, a four-home game stretch there with Campbell, and then we also for the midweek game, and then we have, like Bubba said, we have Thursday, Friday, Saturday with Memphis. So that'll be the 9th, 10th, 11th. Make sure you mark those down. Let's get rocking. That'd be awesome to have 6,000 people.
That'll be the 16th, 17th, and 18th.
Correct. Yeah, 16th, 17th, and 18th for the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And they need to definitely We need to get big crowds.
Davis McKenzie, 50, okay?
Yeah, 5,600 people. What is it, the record, 5,600?
It is 5,581. 5,581, which was set back in 2009 against the North Carolina Tar Heels when they were ranked number one and Kevin Brandt shut them out.
Yeah, that's going to be a great time next weekend, so good luck. You guys have any final parting thoughts before we go?
Go Pirates.
Yeah, go Pirates. I'm looking forward to being at Bochimer Stadium tonight to take in this top 10 matchup, and hopefully it will be similar to last year's result where the Pirates won 12-0 over what was then the sixth-ranked Tar Heels.
That would be nice. I don't think it's going to be like that, but if it is, that'll be a great
surprise. I'm certainly not expecting that. I'm expecting a competitive ball game, whichever way it goes.
All right. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.